Hi, and welcome to Mark's Messes versus the Evolutionary War, the 12-issue limited podcast. In each episode, I'll be looking at one of the Marvel 1988 annuals with the banner of the Evolutionary War. I will examine both the main story and the backup, and in the 12th and final podcast, I will take a look at the High Evolutionary story, which runs at the end of nearly all the annuals. This annual is the New Mutants, annual number 4, and this is episode number 4. Yes, folks, it's a tribute to teenagers everywhere. The New Mutants are a comic book I did collect for quite a time, just round about this era. I was actually through X Factor and their young mutants that got me interested, because they join up in a while in future stories here. Oh, and they're both written by the same writer. Now, the New Mutants are an offshoot comic of the X-Men. And the story goes, according to Marvel Comics' The Untold Story by Sean Howe, that shortly after Claremont, that someone wanted to do an X-Men title with the idle X-Men characters. Tom DeFalco, who was the editor, noticed that the multiple Spider-Man titles had sustained long sales, and he decided to have kind of a West Coast X-Men book, which would include people like Iceman, Angel and Beast. Claremont and Louise Jones. Chris Claremont, who was a writer at the time, and Louise Jones headed off at the pass. "I wanted to handle it. I didn't want anybody else poaching," Claremont said, in what I presume was his voice. "We basically said, screw it, we'll do our own X title." It would return to the focus of Leon Kirby's vision for the School for Young Mutants, which the book had got away from for a few years. They said, only half-joking, it would be called X-Babies. And of course it turned into the New Mutants, taking different characters. And the characters we'll see in this one are ones like Cannonball, from a mining family down south in the United States, who could propel himself through the air like a human cannonball without the cannon. Sunspot, a Brazilian whose hot temper was appropriate for someone whose strength was amplified by solar energy. Wolfsbane, a young Scottish orphan who found herself transforming into a werewolf with animalistic instincts to match. A Mirage, a Native American who could manifest mental images of the object of the person's greatest desire. Two other characters in it was Elanya Rasputin, called Magic. She was a younger sister to Colossus and had mutant teleportation abilities, but her main power was sorcery. And finally, there was Warlock. His origin was from a Freudian myth in a comedic mood. Warlock was a techno-organic alien child, a living shape-shifting machine, but he was also the prince of an alien world where the ruler, his father, the Magus, slew his offspring lest they become greater than he and dispose of him. Playful and innocent and hardly a warrior, Warlock fled into outer space, crash-landed on Earth near Xavier's school, where he was found by the surrogate family he now spends time with. There you go. There's your basic background to these characters and what they're doing. Where this fits in with the Evolutionary War, we'll find out. The cover of this annual has the High Evolutionary and some of his minions about to put a very pointy probe thing into a young girl who looks as if she's made of magma. That's her name, Magma. Who's lying on the table looking as if she's screaming. Then we open up. Writer of this story is Louise Simonson, who we met earlier in the first episode with the X Factor annual. The penciler is June Brigman and the inker Bob McLeod. June Brigman has done a few of the New Mutants comics. We open up with a scene in a New Jersey chemical dump. Glowworm and Bulk, who were mutants we saw in X Factor's monthly comic, are fighting off purifiers. Bulk, who's a strong mutant, throws barrels of radioactive waste, and Glowworm, with a slug type body, fires his glowball cocktails of explosion goodness with booms going off. The purifiers beat Glowworm and overpower Bulk. They contact Dr. Stack about their victories. The High Evolutionary is in a space station. all fixed up after his fight with Apocalypse. The Purifiers report that Bulk and Glowworm are ready for transport and remove their powers, and all powers that will endanger the human race for the High Evolutionary's great plan. Then we have the New Mutants introduced in classic X-Men style. They're in the Danger Room, practicing. Cannonball and Warlock and Mirage are busy fighting away in Professor Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters, which is kind of like a Hogwarts for mutants in the Marvel Universe. Magneto is in charge. Now, you may know of Magneto as the enemy, but he at this time was head of the School for Gifted Youngsters. Charles Xavier had... Over the past few years, the writers of these books have brought Magneto from being the main villain to less of an antagonist and more of an idealist for Xavier's dreams of humans and mutants living together peacefully. And when Charles Xavier was taken up into space to repair his body and then taken away from Earth, it was Magneto that he left in charge of his school as a way of trying to reform the former villain. Magic teleports herself, Wolfsbane and Sunspot into the Danger Room. Received a letter from another New Mutant, Amora, the person from the front cover who's called Magma. She lives in Nova Roma, which is a fake Roman colony in South America. I came to this idea of Nova Roma very late in comics, and it's just darn right weird. People dressed as Romans in the middle of the Amazon or somewhere like that. And it's just a wee bit freaky. I don't know. Anyway, Magneto doesn't like the interruption. And he gets cross. Sunspot uses this as a chance to have a wee huffy fit and uses his powers. While Mirage is training with the rest of the team, do some exposition until Sam, who is Cannonball, reads the letter from Amora to find that she has been put in an arranged engagement at the age of 16 years old. In some places around the country, that's a bit late. So they bemoan the fact that their friend is going to change so much soon. Into the Purifiers complex. And Dr. Stack explains to Bulk and Glowworm why they're being experimented on and the High Evolutionary's plans to evolve us all. His minions are found another dangerous mutant on their scans of the planet, and it's Magma. And she's having a hissy fit of her own in Nova Roma. Listen, I work with teenagers. This is nothing new. The book seems to be teenagers having hissy fits and going off and sulking amongst themselves. Anyway, she's having a hissy fit about her arranged marriage and her boyfriend, who is Empath. And that's basically his power. He can sort of change people's minds subtly. He calms her down. Maybe he's using his power. Maybe not. Will we ever find out? I don't know. And particularly not caring at the moment. Dr. Stack decides to teleport in and capture her. And only meets Empath as resistance. Let's face it. He's a guy who goes, "Are you sure you want to do that?" And Dr. Stack quickly... so deals with him by whacking him with a big stick. Empath recovers enough to contact his old head teacher, who's Emma Frost, the White Queen, who in turn contacts the Hellfire Club for help. Emma Frost started off as a villain, and she was part of the Hellfire Club, which is kind of evil mutants who use their powers to become successful business people, to dominate humans, and to get people dressed up in scantily underwear. Trust me, that's what happens. Magneto has started to join them because of, mutants being together and helping each other out. So, anyway, the White Queen actually ends up as one of the good guys, eventually becoming the head of the School of Gifted Youngsters with Banshee, who we won't meet in any of these comics. And then she joins the X-Men and becomes Cyclops' main squeeze years down the line. You think it's complicated in this era of 1988? Wait till you get to the early 2000s. Then it just goes wild. Anyway, but I digress. Back at Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters, Magneto is chastising Sunspot for his attitude while bending metal with his mind. For no other reason, that looks pretty cool. And he gets a call from Emma Frost. He dismisses Sunspot, which does nothing for the young mutant's temper. Huffy, blooming teenager. Anyway, the young mutants listen via Wolfsbane's wolf-like hearing, and Magneto leaves to rescue Amara Magma, warning the new mutants to stay where they are, although he doesn't tell them why he's going away. The new mutants know why he's going away and decide to rescue Amara by themselves. Teleport via magic, Alanya, and they arrive at the Purifier's hideout, and they immediately start showing off their powers. Sunspot throws people about, magic teleports people away, Mirage conjures up image of their worst fears, which is like a demon person, and then kicks him. Screech a thud as a Wolfsbane turns into a wolf and rescues Amara. Cannonball swoops her away from the trouble, and even more fighting happens. Sunspot releases the dying Bulk and Glowworm, but with that, their deadly radiation. Mirage is confronted by a very confident Dr. Stack, who throws her into the sciency type machine that sparkles, and Bulk, with his last breath, reverses the machine to give her powers and not to take them away. What will this mean for the young mutant? Well, we'll find out soon enough. Anyway, Sunspot and Wolfsbane rescue Mirage, who now shows her new powers of not a mirage of things, but full physical projection in solid form, and uses it against Dr. Stax. He uses like an alien type thing that he finds it hard to fight off. Not entirely sure. I don't think that it actually eats him, but it gets there. Now, does this mean Mirage has to change her name to Solid Object? Hi, I'm Solid Object. No, maybe not. Or I'm Solid Object. Anyway, the demons then attack the new mutants, which is a bit of a problem, until Mirage conjures up something else. Her spirit lance, whatever that is. More fighting! Which I'm confused. Why don't they just... They've got their friend. Why don't they just teleport away? Until the Hellfire Club turn up with Magneto, and the new mutants decide, well, we don't want our headmaster to find us here. We've been told to stay at home by ourselves in the lonely old mansion. So they split to Xavier's School, and they decide to keep it a secret what just happened. Amora decides to go back to Nova Roma and face up to her responsibilities. And that's the end of this part of the story. Does it advance the story a bit? It does a bit. And again, we have a lost civilization. It seems to be the thing that's happening an awful lot. Let's add in more people we haven't shown for ages about what's happening. The X-Men is a very complicated soap opera type universe that even if you took them away from the rest of the Marvel universe, it'd be enough to keep you occupied for years, and things keep getting added to it. So this is quite... it's not the best of the annuals. It doesn't really give a good look at the New Mutants. It doesn't advance many of their stories on very far. In fact, the only one that really advances is Mirage. And as you'll see, it doesn't really do that much for the character. The character is more interesting because she's Native American, and that conflict between Xavier's white man attitude and her Native American pride is a real conflict in all this. Magneto sounds like such a idiot. He sounds like Snape. That's who he sounds like in this book, instead of a headmaster who cares about the children. And we get glimpses into the Hellfire Club, but not much of one. It's a bit of a mess of an annual, to be honest with. And I didn't look forward to reading it, and not for me. Anyway, second story in this is If Wishes Were Horses, by the same writer and penciler, and Roy Richardson as inker, and Joe E. Workman Jr. as a letterer. Mirage heads away from the school on Brightwind, her flying horse. This is what I mean about being a bit of a soap opera. If you don't know she's got a flying horse, you're going, what? Okay. A year or so before this story, the New Mutants went to Asgard, home of Thor. It's also got a whole lot of other people, including the Valkyrie, who've got flying horses. She picked up a flying horse there. They are bonded in spirit, whatever that means. So just take it from me. She's got a flying horse and she's away off in it. If you were a teenager with a flying horse, you wouldn't be sat at home watching TV. She thinks through her new power of creating actual objects, and she creates Brightwind, a female companion. And Brightwind, being the horse that he heads off after this female companion and drops Mirage into a lake. Teach you to play messing about with a poor horse's heart. Mirage bemoans that she is wet, hurt, and far from home, and thinks of a red sports car would be nice. And when one appears, created from her powers. As she speeds home along the country roads, the police start chasing her. They're wondering why they're waiting for her to stop, as she wasn't doing the speed limit. When the cop asks her for the driving license, she doesn't have it with her. But with her powers, one is reduced. And when she produces something with her powers, the other things, she can only produce one item at a time, so the car disappears. The cop gets suspicious. Very good of him. You know, so car was there a second ago, now it's not here. And Mirage worries that her real name and address are in the license, so her powers change it to Pocahontas. That will not get the policeman suspicious. The idiot. The cop thinks it's aliens, so takes her in for evidence. As he takes her in his car, Brightwind comes to her rescue. And the cop crashes the car. The cop lets Mirage leave on Brightwind. Because let's face it, he must think he's on drugs or something like that. And Mirage uses her powers so the cop doesn't have the license for proof. Her power manifests her spear that she had in the last story. And she makes it into a small spear on a necklace so she can have it with her at all time. And Mirage decides to be careful what she wishes for. Uh-huh. Back at Xavier's, he arrives just before Magneto gets back from his trip up against the High Evolutionary's forces. And he boasts about saving Magna and being able to handle things himself. He compliments Mirage's necklace, who says it's something that she wanted the most. Again, a story that shouldn't really be in existence because it doesn't really advance. It just tells you what her new power is. It doesn't advance the character at all or anything like that. And it's a bit... why, Dada, that's a lovely spear necklace. Thank you, sir. I like it too. It's a gift. And it's exactly what I wanted most. A bit on the nose. A bit sort of straight in there. No, didn't really enjoy this annual. I think it was just too much of it had to be written. Pardon me. And we couldn't get away from that. Would I recommend you go out and hunt this annual down? No. It is not a great story. It gives a bit of it advances a High Evolutionary story slightly by letting you know again why he's doing what he's doing, but I don't think it's worth it. Quite one I quite like to forget. Anyway, next time on Mark's Mess versus Evolutionary War, we look at the Fantastic Four, annual number 21. What could go wrong there? After all, you've got Thing, Human Torch, the Invisible Woman, the Mr. Fantastic. Wait a minute, they're not in it. Thing and the Torch are, but we'll find out next time. End of each show, I highlight a podcast that is hopefully related to the comic I've covered. And this week, it is not one that's related to the comic book I covered, but it's a nice wee podcast, The 20-Minute Long Box by Stephen Lacey, where he has, it's a great wee one, he goes through a different comic every time and just reviews it. A lot better than I can do. But check it out, and I'll play the trailer for it at the end of this podcast so you know where to go. So that's the 20-minute long box. Google that and you'll find it. This has been a Mark's Mess versus the Evolutionary War episode, number 4 of a 12-issue podcast. All characters are property of Marvel Comics. Thanks to Josh Woodward of joshwoodward.com for the title music. Next episode, The Fantastic Four.
My name is Steve Lacey, and I'm a podcaster. The randomizer hit my long boxes, and now I'm lost in my comic book collection. Help me. Help me, listen, please, is there anybody out there who can hear me? I'm being controlled by an overbearing and fickle randomizer. I'm doing everything I can to review this book in the next 20 minutes. This is the 20-minute long box. The 20-Minute Long Box is the briefest and most random of comic book podcasts. Every 2 weeks, a completely random comic book from my collection is the subject of the show. Find me at the show's site, 20minutelongbox.libsyn.com, the show's blog at 20minutelongbox.wordpress.com, or search for 20-Minute Long Box on iTunes. Prepare yourself for random.